Again, this is State versus Ford, and you may approach.
Thank you, Your Honor. Distinguished members of the court, my name is John Jeblica. I represent the appellant, Jacob Ford, in this matter. I thank the court for its time and attention. I wanted to first start off responding, since I had a 49-page brief to begin with, to the Attorney General's appellate brief, just addressing the importance of, I think it was the Exhibit 25, which dealt with a conversation between Jacob Ford and a witness over the phone, and the trial court not allowing the appellant to make a or finish a offer of proof. The importance of it, I think, in the AG's brief, they had stated that it wasn't shown why this is important. I do think the whole point of the offer of proof is to be able to fully bring to the court's attention the foundational concerns, and it was very important to, given the very emotional nature of that exhibit and what was said, and especially since the witness was quoting abusive head trauma without a medical background, showing and fully developing both the contact with the detective that had browbeat, which I couldn't bring in because I wasn't allowed to finish an offer proof, couple and tying that in with the tremendous stress that witness was under, given seeing her daughter in the tremendous shape it is, and having to deal with a detective that was very, very strong arm, I would argue, with her. Once again, this isn't in the record because I wasn't allowed to make a complete offer of proof, and that there was quite a lot to go into, and I do not believe the record shows I was stringing out and taking forever on an offer of proof. I do get a point that a judge has a right to say, hey, we've got to control the nature of the trial and not allow a trial to go off the rails and let somebody browbeat or pettifog their way through something. That was not here. It was a very brief offer of proof and a very unorthodox interruption by the deputy county attorney to ask if I was finished, and then somehow the judge, I guess, took that as an unorthodox objection and cut off the offer of proof. So I would ask the court to consider that and an offer of proof to preserve an objection, since it's an appellant's burden. It's one of the most important things I think we have in the judiciary system. Also, I would note with regard to the abusive head trauma, there was the testimony of Dr. Monson on the sufficiency of the evidence, which I realize defense isn't usually winning on sufficiency, but I think where this ties in is Dr. Monson is a biomechanical engineer whose job it is to look into, and his expertise is a causation mechanization aspect of why things happen, how they can test it. When doctors are taught in medical school, it's because of the research of biomechanical engineers. That is very important, especially given Dr. Haney's comments as listed in the brief and in the record of kind of thinking what biomechanical engineers might do and then not really sure, yet the literature that's out there is based on their very studies. They are the people responsible for giving us protection in our vehicles and understanding whether it's a child or an adult when they do airbags, that how it is important and how physics can go on this. I would note, too, without the abuse head trauma opinions, there is no corroborating evidence anyone that seen Jacob Ford hurt the child. It is relying totally on that diagnosis, and where I think it's incredibly important, where this isn't just the general run-of-the-mill sufficiency of the evidence, is we have the person in Dr. Monson that studies it, knows it, can relate it to physics as far as what are the chances on this, and it is possible for this to happen accidentally. We have doctors who heard it in medical school, which isn't minor, but when you have experts, Dr. Monson was alone among the experts who had had the study and the ability to say this. I would note, too.
But, counsel, Dr. Monson also wouldn't rule out that it was intentional.
And I would agree with that. And that's another thing on my, both he and I had a medical doctor who's an emergency doctor, also Dr. Rothfetter, say that. And they said that, and I wasn't calling experts, you know, to play games. It's, when we look at it, it could be both accidental or intentional. The key is with a burden of beyond a reasonable doubt, when a biomechanical engineer can take a look at what the defendant's statement of how it happened, view the video, which I sent him, which I think he clearly testified to, he did, of saying, is it possible for it to happen this way? And the answer was yes. I would note, too, for the state's doctors, Norton would have important times where at one point she did say that. On other times, she did state, you know, generally, no, it's not possible for it to happen accidentally. Generally, I don't know that that's proof beyond a reasonable doubt is where I'm getting at, and that's why the abusive head trauma diagnosis is very troubled. I understand it's an accepted diagnosis, but also with abusive head trauma, under what was a video that was cited in there, the Plunkett video, where a grandmother was videotaping a child who was, I believe, 23 months, if I've got it correctly, fall in a very, very short fall, that they actually died. Under the abusive head trauma standards, that grandparent would be facing the same charges, but for having the video there. I want to say fortunately having the video there. I don't ever say having a grandchild fall and die is a fortunate thing. That's a terrible thing. So I want to be careful in how I characterize that. So I think there's incredibly important issues here. And also addressing on this was the multiple blood bleeds from Dr. Pogue, who had stated he had seen multiple blood bleeds on there. The state had no answer for that. The closest that came was this child's mother saying, I dropped the child some time before this incident happened, and that could account for possibly one of the one or two prior ones Dr. Pogue was saying. Dr. Haney had certainly testified originally to one traumatic incident causing it, then backtracked when she came in rebuttal and said, yeah, I would defer to Dr. Pogue on that. So this abusive head trauma, I don't argue it's not a recognized diagnosis. I don't argue that the courts have thrown this out, but with a biomechanical engineer testifying, who is the person in the best position who actually studies this to say this, I think that has merit. I have about 2.5 minutes. I will reserve. Thank you.
May it please the court, my name is Melissa Vincent. I'm an assistant attorney general, and I represent the appellee of the state of Nebraska. Appellant has assigned 5 errors in his brief. The state submits that all of them are without merit. Payne's state of mind at the time of the phone call was not relevant, and nothing before could have provided by way of an offer of proof would have made it relevant. Payne's statements regarding the cause of Skylar's injuries were neither testimony nor an opinion, but even if they were, it wouldn't matter since the district court's decision didn't depend on them. The evidence adduced by the state, which consisted largely of expert testimony by Skylar's treating physicians, was clearly sufficient to support his conviction. Whatever her earlier or prior injuries were, they obviously weren't affecting her well-being, and when she was taken to the hospital, she presented with a constellation of symptoms which were indicative of recent and substantial head trauma consistent with abuse. Those included acute subdural hematomas, bleeding along the phallus, bilateral retinal hemorrhaging, swelling throughout her brain, and, of course, the seizures. Dr. Haney testified that those were not consistent with the shortfall that was described by Ford, and she further ruled out any other possible explanations for those injuries. And we submit that that evidence, viewed and construed in the light most favorable to the state, was sufficient to support his convictions. And finally, Ford's sentence was not excessive given the seriousness of the offense, his criminal history, which included 2 recent assaults, and, of course, his score on the LSCMI, which placed him at high risk to reoffend.
Do you see any problem with the offer of proof being cut short?
I do not, because as I said before, her state of mind simply wasn't relevant. It doesn't matter what she was thinking at the time she had that phone conversation. It doesn't prove that it was intentional or accidental. So the fact that she might have been accusatory or said something, I don't agree necessarily she was making her own diagnosis. I think she was probably relying on whatever she had been told by the doctors and the cops saying, hey, look, this looks like it's intentional, it's consistent with her being shaken, etc. She was simply repeating that. But in any event, I don't think her So first of all, it wasn't testimony, but her state of mind really was not relevant, and I don't think that there's anything he could have shown that would have made it relevant.
Was Dr. Haney able to address the biomechanical engineer's theories that he relied upon in order to come to the determination that it could have been an accidental fall?
She did. She was asked about some of the same studies that he relied on. Because basically, at least my impression of both Rothbetter and Dr. Morton's testimony is that, or Monson, excuse me, was they were saying, hey, this wasn't shaking. It was blunt force trauma. And they said, we can't tell you whether it was intentional or accidental, but they said they also acknowledged that even if it had occurred, I mean, that it could have occurred by the fall that he described, but that was unlikely. And she went through some of those studies because she was specifically asked about them and said some of them weren't valid or had since been rescinded and some of those things. But, you know, frankly, I would take the testimony of Dr. Haney, who has seen hundreds and possibly thousands of children who have been abused in these types of situations, over a biomechanical engineer who's mostly working with dummies and computer models. And I'm not saying that that's not relevant or doesn't have probative value, but I find her testimony far more compelling under the circumstances here. If there are no further questions, we would ask the court to affirm the judgment of the district court. Thank you.
Thank you. And how much time do we have left?
Would you address something for us?
Yes.
Address how you believe Payne's state of mind was relevant.
Okay. Why I think it is very relevant is, and that's why I guess I was a little bit mystified by in the AG's brief of saying this isn't relevant, where it's the state that's bringing in Exhibit 25, which showing all the things that the witnesses' accusations are being made, and the idea that it's not relevant when these are powerful accusations in a very emotional state. Her emotional state, the things impacting it, the reason she's saying it becomes very relevant. Once again, to answer the Attorney General, it wasn't the defense that was offering Exhibit 25. That was the state of Nebraska.
But how does it go to the ultimate issue as to whether or not he did it? How does her state of mind go to the ultimate issue?
Well, because once the state offers Exhibit 25, you've got yet another witness seemingly making a conclusion. He's done it and then putting it to him on a phone where obviously somebody accused of that looks uncomfortable. It's highly relevant because where the judge and the court decided to admit Exhibit 25, why she's saying what she's saying in that exhibit that is accepted and received into evidence and not, as far as I can see in anything in the record, under any limitation it was received into evidence, period. And the witness was making very much definitive statements of abuse of head trauma. Had I been able to finish my offer of proof, I could have also gone into how that witness was impacted fully by the emotion of having her child in danger, having been browbeat by a detective, and then subsequently later had changed her mind on that. And normally, if I was bringing it in regularly, I would understand it wouldn't be relevant. Once Exhibit 25 comes in, that's an item of evidence the defense has to answer, and it's absolutely prejudicial when I don't have an opportunity to meaningfully finish an offer of proof to show and make every point to counter Exhibit 25, and that's what I would argue. I respectfully ask the court to reverse this conviction, and I do think with the sufficiency of the evidence, it supports a negligent finding of child abuse, not intentional, given Monson's matters, and I'm out of time, but I think with the statements of both Monson and the state's doctors, where they were equivocating at times, too, that as cited in the brief, this did not meet the state's burden of proof. Thank you.
Thank you very much. All right, we'll allow for counsel leave. Thank you. The matter is submitted.